I wonder if you're one of the many people who've written to us here at the BBC asking what it's like to broadcast to the world, or whether anyone can do the job. We often receive visits from broadcasters and other people from around the world who come to Bush House simply to find out how the BBC operates, and we're always delighted to see them. But for those of you who haven't yet had a chance to pay us a visit, Alan Le Breton spent a couple of hours this week in the company of the people whose job it is to talk to the world each day, the announcers and newsreaders.
BBC World Service. The News. Read by Peter King. John Toohey.
Ashley Hodgson.
Pippa Harpen.
Roger Collins.
The familiar voices of just a few of the 24 regular announcers and newsreaders in the World Service here at Bush House. There's something like 17 news bulletins broadcast during a full day, along with press reviews, sports and music programmes. And announcers are also responsible for linking programmes. Well, this last important task is called continuity, and it was in the continuity studio that I met John Gordon, keeping an eye on things.
Can you just give me a quick idea of what you're doing? You've got all these controls in front of you. What exactly is the job up here?
Basically, the job is merely to provide the cement for the bricks provided by the BBC World Service. All the programmes that go out in the BBC World Service 24 hours a day, we've just got to link them up.
So, in fact, this is the nerve centre of the output?
In a sense, it is, because all our programmes, all our sources come here before they go to the control room and then to the transmitters, and we are responsible for maintaining the service.
How many people will we be broadcasting to just at this moment? Who are the programmes directed to?
At this minute? Well, what is it? It's nearly 10 o'clock GMT. At the moment, we're going eastwards. We're going to Europe, Africa, to the Middle East, the Far East. And at 11 o'clock in an hour's time, we shall be going westwards to America as well.
Well, I suppose, in a sense, this continuity operation is the end of the chain, the supreme test of the blend between attention to technical detail on the one hand, with the informality and ease of communication on the other. But let's go back to the beginning. Suppose somebody wanted to be an announcer and came to see Anne Every, who's in charge of presentation in the World Service. What would she expect of them?
Outside the technical area, well, I would first of all want somebody for World Service to speak something like Southern Standard English, because with an audience, many of whom have English as their second language, not their mother tongue, this seems to be the most easily understood, and that's the most important factor. They must have, I think, most important of all, the desire to communicate, to tell, not just to read. It's not about reading words off a piece of paper. It's about telling what they know. It's certainly, it's a question of thinking of that, just that one listener, the other end, who they want to communicate something to.
And some announcers have their own personal way of getting the message over. Roger Collins.
I regard the job as that of a storyteller rather than a reader. It's essential, as I see it, for me to understand as fully as possible the story so that I can then tell the story with some authority to what I do have in the back of my mind at all times is that of a listener who is slightly hard of hearing. We are broadcasting in the main from Bush House on shortwaves, and the vagaries of shortwave reception are well known to all our listeners. It therefore seems pretty important to me that what we must do is not only tell a story with conviction and understanding, but we must also make it perhaps just a little easier for the listener over a distance of 6,000 or 7,000 miles or more to take in what we're saying.
So calm and authoritative as they might seem to us listening at home, you don't have to stay too long with any announcer on duty to notice the glances at the clock, the ear inclined to the speaker. When you are an announcer, then, can you relax and enjoy the programmes being broadcast? John Gordon.
Yes, you can. You see, it's a knack, I think, you learn. It can be a bit hairy at times when you're perhaps you've got an awful lot of little programmes, say, coming out. They've all got to fit into a certain time slot, and you've got to be very careful to observe those time slots. But, I mean, we've got a programme now which is lasting half an hour. It's a musical programme. It's an undemanding programme. It's a very pleasant programme. It's a very popular one, Tommy Vance's Magical Mystery Tour. But it isn't a demanding programme. And I can relax talking to you now because I know it's got 14 more minutes to go. And the tape's running happily. Yes, and you very often have a nice long play, and you can listen to those. But you've always got to remember that at the end of that play, you're going to have to provide the next junction, and you've got to be prepared for it. I mean, the worst possible thing for a continuity announcer is not to be prepared.
And you really do have to be prepared for anything. Roger Collins can cite one eventful, or shall I say non-eventful, news bulletin.
I recall one instance going back many years when I was sent off to the studio with about 2 minutes to go with half the bulletin in my hand, with the promise that the newsmen would send in the other half in a matter of minutes after they'd tidied the stories. In fact, they didn't come in with the rest of the news. I ran out of news, in fact, and had to switch off, saying something like, I will read the rest of the news when it reaches me from the newsroom. I had to switch off. I had to go out of two studio doors, along a corridor, down a passage, through another swing door to the newsroom, to find the editor who was idly chatting up a typist.
So suppressed pandemonium all round, but not a hint to the listener. Nor can you afford to reveal anything you might feel about news items that you're reading. Pippa Harben was one of the first women to read the news, a development which itself prompted mixed reaction from many of our listeners.
My very first news bulletin ever, unfortunately, had in it the assassination of the American ambassador in Khartoum. And I was fairly, I mean, I was very jittery before I started the news bulletin anyway, and this I found extremely difficult to do without sounding even more moved than I obviously was. I think you have to not sound too moved, or you put too much of a gloss on the news, which is not obviously either acceptable to all your audience or necessary to any of your audience. They're not really interested in how you feel.
So prospective announcers, be warned. It's obviously an enjoyable job, but from my observations at least, it's by no means as natural or effortless a task as Keith Bosley made it appear as I watched him bring a music programme to a close a day or so ago.
What will you have to be doing in a few seconds from now?
Well, Claudio Arrau has just finished his Beethoven Variations, and that will end in 15 seconds from now, and then it's up to me to talk. I have, of course, all the material that I need for this next junction as time comes. Ah, the music has become quiet, so I have to speak to the world now. Next from London, a bulletin of world news, followed by news about Britain. At 11:15 British time,
Keith Bosley, one of the announcers and newsreaders who speaks to the world every day. How to be an announcer and a newsreader.